Welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. My name is Burnsy, the artist previously known as Adam.
Okay, that's gonna throw me, dude. And I'm Blair. I don't have a cool nickname. I'm just here for eye candy. Dad's Group is about helping fathers and helping families. And what we aim to do on this podcast is bring you conversations that will build you up, build up your fathering, and support the growth of your family. What we like to do, what Burnsy and I like to do when we catch up, we just ask the question simply, Burnsy, how are you out of 10, mate?
Yeah, today I would say 9.9 out of 10.
Wow.
I always just like to leave a little bit in there to, you know, make the day even better. Yeah, but
there's always room for improvement.
You know, it's it is a chilly day here in Brisbane, but like just loving. I've had really great quality time with my son this week.
Cool, man.
So yeah, really enjoyed getting to spend that extra time. That's making, yeah, giving me an extra boost this week.
Fantastic, mate.
How about you, man?
Well, I'm fluctuating, mate. Like I think starting off the day, I probably started off at a 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Just stress, man. Like just stress has been the main thing there. But like, you know, throughout the day, you know, I went to the gym and that always helps me just to sort of process stuff and whatever else.
Yeah.
And going away this weekend with the family for a retreat, which is good. And so that's gonna, I'm looking forward to that as well. So probably bumping me up to more of a 7 now. Still a lot on my plate. I know it's gonna improve once I tick some things off my list, so but it's probably a 7 at the moment.
Yeah, cool. Well, we're about to chat about the pod, last week's pod, this week's pod. So that might get you up at least to maybe an 8 or 9. Hey, let's try for that.
Cool.
Hey, man, so last week was Mental Health Week.
Yeah.
And throughout that week, we had a big focus on what we as men and as dads can do to improve our health, mental, physical, emotional, the whole gamut. And we also had your chat with Aaron as our last podcast episode. And what you guys talked about, I thought really connected in with the whole Men's Health Week theme.
Yeah.
And you especially hit on how do you fill your cup? Like, what are those things that we do that energize you, that have you ready to go, that might seem sort of selfish, but actually build you up to be a better man and a better dad in order to serve your family? So I wanted to maybe come back to that as a question of reflection at the start of this. That rhyme, that was cool. it's a question of reflection at the start of this episode. What is one thing that you do, Blair, to fill your cup?
It's hard to do one thing at the moment, but I mean, just to say one thing, but listen to the podcast if you haven't listened to it already. I think I'm going deeper there. But one thing is those conversations with Aaron and someone like yourself as well, Burnsy. Like we catch up and we talk about how you feel in your cup. Like, so being intentional, right?
Yeah.
So even having the conversation with a mate, you know, a mate that's sort of checking in, like, how are you going? What are you doing? Rather than just like, go do something. Like someone that's going on that journey with you, understanding the importance of filling up your cup, that's what fills up my cup as well. So just the conversations. And I think, you know, it's having those mates that have got your back and doing that journey of fatherhood with you and making sure that we are growing, we are improving, and we are rejuvenated to be able to step into that crazy life of fatherhood. So that's me, mate. How about you?
For me, it has been watching the NBA finals. I am a mad basketball fan, super nerd. So, and it's great. Like, sometimes I sort of regret that, you know, my family aren't as into it as I am, but it then gives me that space where I can just sort of nerd out by myself and, you know, just sort of enjoy it in my own time and space. So I've been really enjoying that, like getting a lot of energy just about watching good basketball. So
dude, we need to talk more about NBA. We haven't spoken much about it. I really like NBA too, but I'm really hoping someone gives me a KO subscription because I don't want to pay for it myself, and so I can't watch the show. Games as much, but we haven't spoken about it, so we need to have this. We won't do a podcast episode. This would be private time. Private time chats. That's good. Cool, mate. Awesome stuff. Well, who have we got this week?
Yes, this week I chatted with a good mate of mine, a former boss of mine even, Dave Joyner. He founded a group called Project Hatch, and his work is going into schools and helping young people do life better, or do life even better, he'll say. And he's been doing that now for a number of years. As I said, I worked with him in it. And what he does is he helps students just see things from a whole different perspective, really creates sort of a broader vision for young people about their world and how they interact with it. But on top of that, he's also a father himself. He's mentored so many young people. And so I thought he'd be just someone really incredible to come and talk about his own journey as a father, but then also about this work that he's doing with young people and how, you know, his interactions, his encounters with young people and what that might we be able to draw from that as dads ourselves. Like, what could we learn from what he's doing and what he's hearing and seeing from young people who might be a little bit further down the track than our own kids, but, you know, giving us a sense of that culture and experience of young people today. So that's our interview today. Really hope that you enjoy it. I love talking with Dave, and he gives us so many great gems in this one. So enjoy, and we'll catch you next time. Welcome to the Dads Group podcast, Mr. Dave Joyner.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. It's a real treat to be here with you today, mate. I'm loving the work that you guys are doing. I know how passionate you are about being a dad and being intentional, mate. So it's a joy, it's a privilege actually to be here to support the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
And to help out a bit.
And it's sort of cool to connect because what our listeners won't know is that you and I have worked together lot in a lot of different areas over the last, not long enough. So it's really cool to connect in this space, and I'm really excited to dig into some of your work for our dads. But to begin with, we like to start our episodes with a bit of a check-in. So how are you going out of 10?
Yeah,
good question. 10 being the highest.
Of course. Yeah. I'd love to hear how you're doing too, by the way, after this.
Yeah,
I reckon I'm probably about an eight at the moment, feeling pretty good. It's nice to right now be trying to balance family time and work time because it's holidays right now at the moment. So trying to balance some of that. But then also the treat of having a chat with you today, mate. It's been a while, so it'd be great to connect.
Yeah,
a lot of good stuff going for work. Family stuff's going well. So about an eight, I reckon. Always room to improve.
Yeah, nice.
How about yourself?
I'm sitting at a solid 10, I reckon. As I was saying to you before we clicked record, just been really enjoying doing these podcasts and talking to all sorts of different people and just allowing myself to benefit from those conversations. And then, next week I actually get some time to myself without my wife and baby, which sounds incredibly selfish, but I'm going to take it because it's not often that happens. So,
Self-care is never selfish, mate. So,
that's it.
You got to make the most of that. You got to enjoy it.
Just that line right there just made this my favorite interview of the season.
You're welcome. We're done then. Job done.
We're done. Yeah, that's it. Mate, for our listeners, I wonder if you could share a little bit about yourself. If you could introduce your family to us and a bit about your work as well.
For sure.
Because you've got a great story. So,
Cool. So, my wife, Kath, this is our 16th year being married. Knew each other since we were 15, actually. So, I got to marry one of my closest friends, which is nice. More than nice, by the way. It was awesome. But then my eldest boy, his name's Tobias, he's grade 8 right now. And my youngest boy's name's Eli, he's grade 4. Love being a dad, love being a husband. Well, obviously, maybe we'll get into that. The work I'm doing, I get to help students and teachers. I suppose the phrase is do life better, but what's that mean? I suppose it's about helping them understand themselves more. Understand their relationship with others more, understand the influence that they have on other people in their world, how they connect, how they fit in, how they belong, but also living a good, full, bold, intentional, purposeful life. And in doing so, you know, building more resilience, building more emotional intelligence, more independence in a way as well. But yeah, I get to do that all around Australia, working in schools with students and teachers, and love it. And you know, a couple of new projects on the go at the moment as well, which we'll get into. But yeah, really quite fortunate to be able to spend my time helping young people. Really enjoy it. And it was awesome being able to work with you for many years out of doing that as well. So that was
a treat. Yeah. I like that. A good, full, bold, intentional, purposeful life.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Love it. I'd love to hear about, you mentioned your two boys, Tobias and Eli. Can't believe you got a high schooler. Mate, you're too young to have a high schooler.
Mate, I'm still trying to get my head around it too, right? It's crazy.
What's been the highlight of your parenting journey so far with the two boys?
Yeah, I love that question. I think it's more about many, many, many moments of seeing who they are. Kind of get emotion comes up here, right? Emotion's good. Anyway, seeing who they are, seeing who they're being, seeing who they're becoming, but then also for my wife and I, just discovering parenthood. Who we are together as a couple, as parents. And then, you know, like I know that for mums and dads, the fear of failing as a parent is huge. The fear of messing up is huge. Comparison is big, you know, trying to be perfect mum, perfect dad, all that, and it's impossible. You know, there's been so many times when Kath and I have not known how to respond and what to do next. But, you know, we've trusted our gut, we've trusted our code or our values, which we'll get into later. And just being proud of how we've handled something and how it kind of turned out, particularly in those moments when we don't know what to do next. So as parents, I've been loving that, watching the boys have moments of joy. So like I went for a run this morning and when I came home, first thing they said is, oh, Dad, we were listening to, actually, they were watching some videos they made of each other when they were supposed to be brushing their teeth one night about 6 months ago. And they were just having fun, just having a laugh. And they were laughing together about that moment. So, like, I love watching them get along really well and enjoy each other's company and being brothers for each other. Really love that. But then also, again, there are moments when we get to see their decision making. We get to see their one thing I love about our boys is that they want to be good people, that they want to be good human beings. And being able to see that, the emotion. I think being able to see the decisions that they're making. Not just doing what's right but doing what's right, even when it's tough, like standing up for somebody else. Even when they've got nothing to gain themselves, like they do what's right by standing up for someone else and put themselves at risk, by doing that. Moments like when, you know, my eldest boy, Tobias, people call him shy. He's not shy. He talks when he needs to. But seeing him have moments of courage and bravery, like stepping up, leading assembly, when people call him shy because he's a bit nervous, but he's quiet, he's an introvert, he's a thinker, he speaks when he has to. But then seeing him step up and be bold and be courageous, and their resilience and stuff, like, yeah, there's, I know that's a very long-winded answer for a short question, but for me, the highlights along the journey, again, just to summarize if I can, is the many moments of joy as parents of going, we've done okay. Like, yeah, we've made mistakes, but we've done okay. It's worked out. It's working out okay. The moments of seeing them step up and seeing their character in action, and the moments of joy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. And incredible just to hear that sense of pride as well. I think that's... Yeah, just powerful to hear that story, particularly someone, my boy's barely 18 months. So to sort of try and project ahead and think, wow, what will that look like? What sort of people will they become? Yeah, that's really cool. So you talked a bit about your work there, about being helping young people especially do life better. And I've heard you use the phrase do life even better to really make clear it's not about, well, you guys aren't doing life sufficiently, so let me teach you how to do it. As you said, like, you know, to live that good, full, bold, intentional, purposeful life. Mm. I wonder if you could comment on how do you see that being important now in this time to bring that message to young people? What do you see as some of the maybe obstacles or challenges that young people face of having that better life? Because I think, you know, as myself as a new dad and other dads who are listening to this, wherever we're at on the journey, like, that's what we want for our kids, right? We want them to have these good, full, intentional, purposeful lives. What are some of the things that you see come up that can really distract or challenge or be obstacles for our kids? And what are some of the things we can be working on as a people in their lives, particularly as the father figures in their lives, to help them navigate those? Two-part.
Yeah, good question. Good question. I think it's to do with helping young people and ourselves, by the way, to stop being reactionary people all the time, but to be responsive people. I think a lot of the time, young people, and again, adults, right, we are in a state of being reactionary. Now, what I mean by that is, if we feel angry, we act out of anger. We yell, or we throw something, or we hit, or whatever. Or, you know, I said we just then. I know that you don't, Adam, and I don't either. But, you know, like, it's easy to want to do that. If you're feeling insecure, a lot of people will post on social media for the likes, or they'll put someone else down to feel better about themselves, or they will, like, a lot of students right now, year sevens and eights, particularly last year, we're doing these TikTok trends where they're destroying the toilets at their school. And this is happening in some of the most well-to-do schools I work with in the country.
Yeah.
Schools where there's never been behavior issues, right? Especially when I'm working with them, never. And yet these exact kids, these students, are destroying the school toilets and posting it up on TikTok, or they're filming their teachers and putting it on TikTok because, again, I think they're living in this reactionary state of I want external validation. So I want to feel good about who I am, so I'm going to do this so I get the likes and so on. You know, I feel, again, insecure, or I feel down, so I'm going to put somebody else down so I feel better about myself. I feel bored, so I'm going to look at a screen for a while, or I'm going to play the PlayStation, whatever. Or, you know, I want to look cool to my friends, so I'm going to go out and buy a $15 bottle of Prime from the shop now because some YouTuber made it, right? $15 the other day, ridiculous. So I think it's coming from this a lack of emotional understanding and literacy and ability to work with the emotion instead of being controlled by the emotion. You know, it's about trying to put young people in the driver's seat of their lives and who they've been, and to be a lot more intentional and a lot more purposeful, to be able to understand what their emotions are telling them. And therefore what they need to do next. But really importantly, to ground them in really who they are, who they want to be, and who they need to be. You know, like in the work I'm doing at the moment, we're working on what is your code? What are the three words that you want to live by as a person, the three qualities? For example, for my family, it's kind, strong, thoughtful. And I can get into that a little bit more later if you like, about why we came up with those words. But when I talk to the students now about, you know, I say, give me a nod. Like, I'm working with a whole year level, for example. I say, give me a nod if you could tell me your family values. Maybe 5% give me a nod. I say, give me a nod if you know that your family has spoken about the values, but you can't remember them. Maybe another 5% give a nod. And I say, shake your head if you don't remember talking about family values at all. The rest of them, you know, 90%, shake their head. So we don't know what our family values are. We haven't spoken about them.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's really difficult to put life into perspective, to make the right decision, even when it's the hardest thing to do, to to care less about what other people think. You know, like young people, just the way their brains are wired and stuff, it's reward trumps risk so often.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we need to change that by giving them a solid foundation, knowing who they are. And for me, that's the code. What are the three words that you want to live by? Mm-hmm. You know, trying to rewrite the negative internal dialogue that young people particularly are plagued with. I mean, so are we as adults, but young people are particularly plagued with the negative dialogue. And again, their reaction, they come from a place of reaction to that as well. Whereas when you focus on what's your code, what are the values that you're going to live by, it rewrites that. It helps you focus on something that's a lot more empowering in terms of who you want to be. It gives you more guidance, more clarity, more direction.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, hearing you talk, Dave, it sort of the quote about, you know, between stimulus and response, there's a space for reason. Mm. And I just think about our kids, even from a young age, have so much stimulus. Like, I'm, you know, not prideful, not so prideful that I won't admit that, you know, I will stick a screen in front of my son's face just to distract him so I can get something done around the house. You know, the stimulus is there from such a young age. And what I'm hearing you say, it's not necessarily parents' fault or school's fault or society's fault even, but just there's so much stimulus that, you know, that space between stimulus and response gets smaller and smaller. So even if you have talked about, say, family values, you know, there's three words you want to live by, you know, you're sort of combating like hours and hours and hours of content that they're downloading into their brains. Mm. And as you said, the way their brains are made up at this stage. So you talked about your family came up with a code, the three words you want to live by. I'm wondering if you could, I know you talk about it with students, so maybe could you paint, how do you talk about it with the students you present to or the young people you present to? And then how can we sort of extract that for the parents and for families to talk about it within that family context?
Yeah, perfect. Actually, firstly, I love what you said about stimulus and response. And that's what I talk with the students as well about. When you develop this code that we're going to talk about, it actually, the more you think about it, the more you see your code. Like I've got mine on my wristband just here, KST, for kind, strong, and thoughtful. And the more you are aware of it, the more you think about it, even after the moment. Like if you make a mistake, so if I react in a way to my sons that's not kind or strong or thoughtful, then because it is my code, I'm more aware of the mistake afterwards. Mm. So I can figure out, okay, what's helpful from this? What can I do better next time? Don't have a gut. Don't feel guilt forever. Don't go, I'm a failure as a dad. No, I've messed up really bad. Like, okay, I've made a mistake. What's the learning? Mm. What's the important moment from this? Take out what's helpful and then let go of the rest. But then, like, modeling as a dad, apologize afterwards. Say, hey, I messed up. That wasn't kind. That wasn't strong. That wasn't thoughtful. I messed up. I'm going to do better. Now, let's do better type of thing. But the more that you are aware of your code, again, which we're going to get into, it does rewire the brain in a way so that it's more front of mind, so that you're more aware of it, become more of a habit. But the way this actually started, and I love this is a dad's podcast because this is exactly how it started for me. Like we were in COVID lockdown. My wife works at a hospital, normally 3 days a week. So she needed to be there 5 days a week over COVID, which actually helped us out as a family a lot because I couldn't work. Yeah. But then my son's been at home a lot more often then. So that was what, 3 years ago. So they would have been grade one and grade five, right? And all that selfish sibling fighting that happens, which by the way, is actually quite healthy for kids. Yeah. We don't like it as parents because it creates unrest and frustration and stuff for us. But that sibling fighting, psychologists call it theory of mind. It actually helps them understand how someone else is thinking. So theory of mind, how do I communicate with someone else? How are they thinking? It does help to create empathy, even though it doesn't look like it in the moment. It's actually really quite helpful. But it happens so much more of the time. Like, you know, they'd fight over a piece of Lego. They'd fight if they're out not in backyard cricket. Or my favorite one is we've got four kitchen bench stools at home. Three of them are white. One of them is blue, apparently because it looks good. But they used to, not much anymore, but they used to fight over who would sit on the blue stool for breakfast, right? Their reasoning is that they believed that breakfast tastes better when they sit on the blue stool. Now, I had to try it. They were so convinced I tried it. I have smoothies for breakfast, and I started on the blue stool, tasted great, went to the white stool, tasted just as good. But I remember this one day, And I've been working really hard at this point on mindfulness and just being aware. How can I respond intentionally instead of reacting? Mm-hmm. And there was this moment when I think they were fighting over Lego. And I felt the anger and frustration boil up. And I just thought, I need to respond really well, intentionally here. And I spoke to the boys about how we've been kind and thoughtful and generous right now. Yeah. And then so we spoke about the importance of those three words, kind, generous, and kind, thoughtful, and generous. And we spoke about, if you're going to be kind, generous, thoughtful, and generous right now, what behaviors would we actually see? You know, would you be thinking about what you want yourself, or would you be thinking about your brother as well? So we spoke about those three words. And I said to the boys, my wife was at work, wasn't able to run this by her just yet. I had to make a decision. And, you know, how about we use these three words as a family? Kind, thoughtful, and generous. And the boys are like, yeah, okay. Mind you, I had to wait till they calmed down a bit, let the emotion pass before we can talk about that stuff. But then when my wife came home, I had a chat with her about it, and she loved the idea. Yeah. Kind, thoughtful, and generous. And when they started fighting over stuff, we'd stop and we'd go, you know, how are you being kind, thoughtful, and generous right now? Then when school started, we realized that actually we need something else, another word in there, because kind, thoughtful, and generous are kind of similar, right? They're the ways that you think and act towards other people and towards yourself. But there's no real internal driver there. So we came up with strong. So we changed it to kind, strong, and thoughtful. And so then, you know, on the way to school and I dropped the kids off, we talk about how can you be kind, strong, and thoughtful today. If they've done something really good, we say that was strong. Yeah. The way that you were calm just then, that was really strong. Or the way that you stood up for someone, or the way that you say thank you to your teacher every single day, like that's kind and thoughtful. So we keep coming back to that as much as we can. But when I talk to the students about it, we talk about, again, the idea of kind of like a dinghy out in the ocean, right? You know, you got this little dinghy out in the ocean, and during a storm, the massive waves and the winds and stuff, it's got no control. It will be taken wherever the wind and the waves take it, into the rocks or whatever. But if it's got like a deep keel, a really deep keel, then it's got more control. It can either navigate around the storm or through the storm. Having your code doesn't necessarily stop the storms, but it helps you navigate around it or through it a lot more easily, because it gives you a foundation. It gives you the filter. For us as a family, our filter is what I feel like doing right now, what I think I need to do right now. Is it kind? Is it strong? Or is it thoughtful? And if the answer is no, then don't do it. If the answer is yes, then go ahead. Yeah. And then afterwards, look back and go, you know what? Whatever the outcome, as far as I'm aware, I acted in with best judgment. I acted in a way that's purposeful, a way that's intentional. I talked to the students about how, again, if the example I gave before about the kids doing stuff at schools for external validation, the TikTok stuff, the damaging the torts and stuff. When you know who you are, and I love that kids decide, you know, they don't want to be told who they need to be. Mm. The kids don't want to be told that you need to be caring. They want to decide because of what's important for them.
Yeah.
When they decide on the words, and I break it up into three columns. What's one word that helps you think about yourself and others in a better way? What's a word that helps you act towards yourself and others? And what's your internal driver? So, for example, the think column are things like obviously thoughtfulness, being accepting, respectful. Act column, things like being kind, being supportive. The internal column, things like strength, hope, optimism, sense of gratitude and appreciation. So, you know, that internal driver. When they decide who they want to be, you have a greater sense of clarity that this is my code and it's different to yours, and that's okay. You value different things, and so do I. And you know what? Well, we don't need to compare. It's different, and that's actually okay, and it's healthy. And when I talk to the kids and I say, look, the people who are destroying the school torts and stuff, if they had a code, if they knew who they actually needed to be, do you think they'd still do that? Because they would clearly know that doing that's not right. It's not the right thing to do. And they mostly say no. We'd want to hope they don't do it. And hopefully that's true too. Hopefully they wouldn't. But when you know who you are, there's research that backs up, by the way, about when kids know their family values, their family stories even, they are more resilient. Now, by the way, what I said earlier about 90% from, you know, anecdotally, 90% of kids, I think anyway, don't know their family values. And if the families aren't doing it, by the way, I'm not blaming parents here.
Yeah.
Parents are doing the best they can do, right? And maybe they are telling their kids in different ways. Maybe it's not as explicitly as these are our values or this is our code, but maybe they are doing it in other ways, but the kids just aren't picking up on it. But when kids know their family values or their code, they are more resilient. Mm-hmm. So there's one of the schools I work with down south. After talking to grade 12s about their code, I love it. The year 12 coordinator asked every student to send in their name and their code, their three words. And then they've got a laser cutter at school, and they made a keyring for each individual student with their code on it. And the kids were saying that the end of year trial exams was less stressful because they had their code with them. And again, the research about being more resilient, overcoming challenges and adversities, it supports that.
Yeah.
The research also says that it is easy to say no to negative social pressure. And social pressure is massive for kids. That's why they're paying $15 to $20 for a bottle of Prime. Who would do that?
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't for pressure, if it wasn't for external validation, like, why? It's the same as the $2 drinks or the $6 drinks. Why do we need to be spending so much? If they know who they are internally, their values and stuff, they are more able to say no to negative social pressure, to make unpopular decisions, to do what's right, even when it's the most difficult thing to do. And it's been really cool seeing. So sometimes I get to connect with students again a year or two later, and it's been really nice hearing the change they've tried to create in their life. By knowing their code, by really trying to live to their code, and the difference it's making for them has been really cool.
Yeah, and I imagine too, like, you know, if we're for our younger families, or, you know, new dads, that sort of thing, those listeners, that if you start that conversation now before those social pressures really ramp up, that it's going to be ingrained and such a part of those young people's understanding of self, that when those pressures do become more, they're really established in, as you say, like, who I am, who I know I want to be and need to be in this space. So, like, you mentioned that you brought up those three words with your boys. Like, in that moment, where did those words come from? Where could our listeners, our families that are listening, where can they pull these words from? Are they, is it an internal thing? Is it a gut thing? Is it a scour the internet and pick the best words? Like, how did you come up with those three words in that moment? And how can our families listening to this, how can they find the best three words for their family values, their code?
Yeah, nice one. So, over some time I've been developing the list, the think column, the act column, the internal column. And I'm happy to share that with listeners as well, for them to use that. But in the moment, for me, talking to students all around the country about, who inspires them and how come, and so many times they talk about their mum or their dad.
Mm.
Their mum or their dad is the person they cannot live without for a whole year. Like, I love asking the kids that question too. Who can't you do without for a year? You got to hear a lot of their responses as well. And, when they say things like my mum or dad, because they're there, because they're kind, because they're caring, because they're thoughtful. So I was picking up on the words that I hear students use a lot, and went from there. And finalize my list, it was scouring the internet a bit. It was talking to the students, which words really work for you. But then also, coming from what I hope is an emotional intelligence and positive psychology model as well, what are the ones that do help you step up to be your best, your proudest, your favorite self? And see, that's the thing about the code. The code is not about what's your strengths.
Mm.
I'm not saying kindness, strength, and thoughtfulness my gifts and my strengths. No, it's far from that. In fact, it's aspirational for me.
Yeah.
I know that when I'm being my best, my proudest, my favorite self, that's when I act from a place of kindness. That's when I am being strong, and instead of reacting, I'm actually being calm. I'm taking a deep breath and I'm trying to be calm and I'm trying to be in control. Or even like, you know, a lot of the dads are either experiencing or going to be experiencing soon too, the kids' sports, you know. And for me, even though I get to, you know, talk to in front of big groups of students, in social settings, I get pretty awkward and insecure and self-comparison and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And so for me, my mantra when I turn up to that is be strong.
Yeah.
Be strong, dude. You got this. So I'd walk up then and have a chat to the parents and stuff. So it is, instead of focusing on the weaknesses, you know, it's focusing on the good. And actually, I heard this podcast once. I love it. And by the way, I know that this podcast was a business one, a leadership one. And I know that not everyone is spiritual or religious or Catholic in their own way, but there's still a deep truth within this. And this leader, who, by the way, I don't think is religious either, but he said that leadership's about bringing out what God put in. It's not putting in what God left out.
Mm.
You know, and for listeners who aren't religious whatsoever, that's fine. And, you know, it's about the truth behind this is it's the giftedness. Another word is the giftedness, the strengths. Mm. It's not about putting in what's missing. It's about bringing out what's already there. And I think by using the code, by focusing on the three empowering words, it brings out what's already within you, brings out even more so. Oh, now that's right. I pause then because I'm trying to think back to earlier you said, you know, again about younger dads. And this is one of the things I wished I did. I wish I did at the start. My wife Kath and I, we spoke a lot about the parents that we want to be. We were intentional about who we'd spend time with and who we'd learn from, and I try not to compare, but who you want to embody, I suppose, and the cause we want to embody. What we didn't do though is narrow it down to the three words.
Yeah.
You know, the kids learn so much more from who you are being than what you say and what you do. It's really who you're being and your presence and stuff. And for me, I think, and for any expecting or young dad listening, developing your own code now and living to it now and allowing it to integrate into every aspect of your life now. Like, you don't pick and choose. It's always. Using it now, practicing it now, that will become your family values and your kids will pick up on it, especially if it is part of your language. Like when you talk about Uncle Joe, because you know, of how strong he was, he overcame some adversity earlier. Or Auntie Flo, because how kind she is when her friends and stuff or her other family is suffering, whatever, she's the one who makes them the dinners and brings it over. So it's not just about talking about your words as a family unit and this is who we need to be, but also allowing others to be examples of those words, of your qualities, of your code in action. So I think starting that now, even when your kids can't talk. And so for me too, like as a dad, I think, you know, again, we all make mistakes. I truly think, especially for anyone listening here, because my guess is that if you're listening to this podcast right now, you want to be a good dad. And it's important to be a good dad. And so when you want to be a good dad and when it's important to you, my guess is that you're acting out of what you believe is a good way to parent anyway. And if you're a good enough parent, like our mutual friend L, child psychologist, says, good enough parenting is good enough for the kids. They're going to turn out okay. We're allowed to make mistakes, but they're going to turn out okay. It's not about being a failure or not, because when we focus on being a failure, it's like when Tobias plays cricket, he loves his cricket, but when he focuses on don't get out, guess what happens? He gets out or he doesn't score runs. When he focuses on hit the ball, but play aggressive, be aggressive, be strong. What we talk about, as in throwdowns, we use the strong word. We say free and strong, play free, play strong. And when we do that, he does a lot better because he's not thinking about being a failure. Yeah, you know, he's thinking about something that's going to empower him. So, yeah, if I was to do it again, I think if we were to come up with this kind of strong thought for earlier, in moments of crossroads, not knowing how to respond, what to do, not knowing what the best decision is for us as a family, or my child is throwing a tantrum, massive meltdown tantrum in the middle of the shopping center right now. Like coming back to what's the kindest thing to do for my child right now, mid tantrum? What's the strongest thing for me to do as a parent right now? And what's the most thoughtful thing to do right now? Not care about every other parent looking, but what do I need to do for my child in this moment right now? And when you do it, it's still going to get it wrong, but it's not going to be as wrong. Because you're coming from that deeper sense of purpose and for what is important to you. So yeah, any young, new, expecting dads, develop your code. Again, happy to share that list. Develop your code now. Start living to it now. And then see what happens for you, by the way, in your own relationships. And then become part of your language. And then your kids will grow up with it as well. And then, so for Tobias now, because he's 13, I keep talking to kids saying, mate, do you like our three words? Or do you want to change it? Because it has to be owned. We can't tell the kids this is, these words must be important to you. No, it needs to come from within. So one day he might go, actually, I'm going to change a word. And if so, awesome, because he owns it and that's him being himself.
Yeah. I love what you say about, you know, like if you were to go back and like that same question for me of what sort of parent do I want to be and what sort of dad do I want to be? But you're right. Without that specific, you know, locking it into three words or however many words you want to use. But I like the three words because I've got a short-term memory loss problem. But like when we got home from hospital, our little fella just forgot how to breastfeed. And so we were having these loud, crying, wakeful nights. And, you know, like the question of what sort of dad do I want to be? Well, I wasn't asking myself that. And if I was, I wasn't, you know, like it didn't give me anything tangible to hold on to. I was thinking, you know, like, why can't I have a sleeping baby, you know, that gets her a whole night? So, yeah, I like that idea of locking in onto words because I think it does give you something a bit more solid to hang on to.
Nice reminder for me too. Like when Tobias was born, he was 5 weeks early. Not only did he forget how to feed as well, when he came home, he forgot how to sleep. So because he was 5 weeks early, he had really bad reflux and colic, which meant he was in pain a lot. And so my wife and I took it in shifts in sleeping. So I'd be downstairs with him. Thankfully, the Tour de France was on. That kept us a little bit sane because we're watching that. And I'd be with him for 2 hours, then we'd swap over. And she'd come down, look after him, and I'd go upstairs and sleep. And we weren't fit for human contact for 4 months. And flying by the seat of our pants and in survival mode. And, you know, by the way, that's okay. Like, we made mistakes and, like, be gentle. That's okay. You're in survival mode sometimes too. But I think, again, if I kept bringing everything back to kind, strong, thoughtful for me, I think some things might have been different. I think I might have been able to be a little bit more present, maybe stronger in asking for help. Things might have changed a bit. But, you know, looking back now, again, it's about being gentle to myself and going, you know what, I wasn't perfect. I made mistakes. And it's turned out awesome. It's turned out so good. You know, so that's okay. Like, I think one of the things is about young parents is, and maybe you guys talk about this heaps, but I think we put too much pressure on the kids being, I'm thinking that they're going to be breakable. And if I don't listen to them this one time, or if I snap this one time, they're going to turn out to be like some mass murderer. And no, they're not, right? They're because, okay, so the research says for any one negative moment in a relationship, it takes 5 positive ones to make up for it. You got a whole life to make up for it. We've got a whole life of being present. And it's not just about how much time, but, you know, apparently they say the quality of time outranks the quantity of time as well. And, be gentle. Mistakes are okay. So I think for me too, it would have been kinder on myself back in those days. I would have been more thoughtful to myself as well, and to my wife, and also to the little fella as well.
Yeah. The other thing you mentioned before was about the impact your code will have on all your relationships. Like, it's not just about 100%. You know, like a model for raising the best child possible, but like how it seeps into. And I think it's the other thing we miss with new parents is that it drastically changes everything in your life, like your relationships, your relationship with your spouse. You know, it's not just about you have this little human that needs to be kept alive. Like everything warps and changes. And I think to have, again, to have something that you can hang on to be that point of direction, like you can still engage in those relationships in a way that's meaningful and purposeful and kind and loving and gentle, as you say.
Yeah.
I think that's something that gets lost in the mix with new parents is like, your relationships change. And I think, to have that code to help you navigate that is so, so crucial. As well as the code, like in your work with students, you as you mentioned before, you delve into that positive psychology, mindfulness, emotional intelligence. Like there's a whole toolbox of tools that you're giving to young people to help them do life better and navigate some of those trickier situations. What are some of the practices or tools that you could recommend to dads that, you know, maybe perhaps you've even used with your boys in helping them to grow? What are some things that you don't have to go off to uni and study psychology or, you know, child development? Like what are some really simple tools that they can start utilizing even right now?
Yeah, good question. I love the specifics. And I really get excited about talking about specifics as well. And I love to hear how you said what's worked with my kids, because I've been talking about this stuff in schools when my kids were too young to do it with.
Yeah.
But now seeing the outcome of it with my kids allows me to have a bit more passion. Doesn't allow me to have more passion, but it is a greater sense of passion and understanding that actually this is going to make a difference for you.
Yeah.
Like the other day, one of the things we talk about the kids is knowing the difference between what you can and can't control.
Yeah.
If you can't control it, then accept it for what it is and then take what's helpful and leave the rest. If you can control it, well, then what can you do? For example, the other day, our life is about cricket, by the way. My wife and I, in our more naive days of being parents, we used to drive past the cricket fields and we'd look at the parents sitting there all day and we'd laugh to ourselves thinking, be buggered if we're going to be those sucker parents who are sitting out there all day watching their kids play cricket. And we're like, well, it's going to be soccer for our boys and that's it. But no. Like they love cricket. Like Tobias loves cricket. And so we love it too now, by the way. Absolutely love it. But and seeing him flourish in that has been so good. But just the other day, he was opening the batting and he got hit on a full toss on his shoulder.
Wow.
Right. And it was only about 10 balls in. He was still on zero. And there's that moment again of internal doubt. What should I do right now as a dad? Should I be, because my wife was with our other son and I'm like, should I be running out there right now? And I thought if I run out to him right now, they work off our emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I make a big deal out of this, he'll go, oh, this must be a big thing. Right, so I kind of just waited a bit to see how he'd be, and he grabbed his shoulder. So I was pretty sure his shoulder was hurt. The parents are looking at me going, what are you doing, Dave? He got hit in the head. I'm like, no, he didn't. It was his shoulder. They're like, no, he got hit in the helmet. What are you doing? So I thought, I'm pretty sure it was his shoulder, but I ran out anyway. And he got hit in the shoulder, not the helmet, thankfully. And the coach was there, and the coach was saying, you know, do you want to come off? Do you want to have a break? And, like, good question. Right, he'd just been hit in the arm. But when we ask a question one way like that, we have like confirmation bias. So when we ask a closed question, like, do you want to come off, instead of do you want to come off or do you want to stay on, right? If it's the one outcome, we think more in those terms and we find reasons why, we should. So then I said to Tobias, I said, hang on, mate, how about, you know, If it really hurts, mate, then one option is absolutely come off. If you can't play, then come on off, have a break. If you can come back on later, then come back on later. So the other option, right, your choice, the other option is if you think you can keep on playing, use this to your advantage. Use it to help you switch on. Because once before, 2 years ago, he got hit in the leg by a really fast bowler. And then we thought he was going to come off, but he stayed on. And he showed his next shot was this really courageous, aggressive shot. And so I said, mate, you can do like you did last time if you want to. You can use this to switch you on and then play with more aggression. So it's up to you. You can come off and have a break or you can use it. And he said, no, I want to use it. I'm like, are you sure, mate? He's like, no, I want to use it. So he stayed on. The next ball, he smashed for four. The ball after that was another full toss like the one that hit him in the arm, and he smashed it for four. Now, smashing for four, that's not what I care about. What I care about is he stepped up with courage.
Yeah.
And he used it to help him in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about why me, it's about come and try me. You know, that's a massive key for resilience. It's not, and this is one of the things we're about with the kids a lot. Not why me, not poor me, it's come on, try me. Like when he went from playing in the younger grade for cricket, if you got out, you just stayed in. Yeah. He went from that to when you're out, proper cricket. He got out for four ducks in a row. In fact, his fourth duck was a diamond duck, which meant he didn't even face a ball. He was run out without even facing the ball.
Oh.
And my wife and I couldn't even be there that game. It was terrible. But we're like, with the conversation afterwards was, let's use this as your comeback story. You know, like, not why me, poor me, I'm getting out four times in a row, ducks, but try me, come on, try me. I think for kids, that's such an empowering thing, a place to come from. Not thinking I can't, but how can I? Not why me, but try me. So that's a really big one. There's another one. This is a really simple breathing technique. And this is all about self-awareness. So there's a big emotional intelligence aspect with this. It's self-awareness and self-management. It's also mindfulness. And neuroscientists have found that it is the one single quickest way to reduce feelings of nervousness, stress, and anxiety. It literally changes the chemicals in your brain. It reduces cortisol and brings in more feel-good ones. It's called the physiological sigh. So what you do is you take a normal breath in through your nose, then you pause, take another little sip in, then the long, slow out. So when you do that, by the way, we do that naturally when we cry. It's that thing. So when we do that, again, it changes the chemistry in your brain. And all you need is 2 to 3 rounds of that breathing technique to reduce the stress and the nervousness and anxiety. And, you know, like I'd have 100 or more kids, 100 to 200 kids in front of me, and we just finished this big singing competition where they're screaming out songs and stuff, and I need them to calm down. And you've seen this, Adam, but we need them to calm down to get them going deep again. And we do the breathing technique with them.
Yeah.
And you can see their state shift immediately just from doing 3 rounds of that breathing technique. The science also says that doing that breathing for 5 minutes is more impactful than 5 minutes of mindfulness.
There you go.
Yeah. So the physiological sigh, a breath in through your nose to fill your belly, pause, top it up with another sip in through your nose, then a long, slow out breath. So that's another thing that you can do at any time, anywhere. Another one is when I drive my kids to school and I get to do that, I talk about what are you looking forward to today? Or what are you grateful for today? Now, the science behind this is it's all about hopefulness. Now, hopefulness isn't wishing. You know, like when I was at school, I wished that my pens had the answers for the exams. I hadn't studied. I'm like, come on, Ben, give me the answers, right? That's wishing. That doesn't help.
Yeah.
Hopefulness is actually knowing that you have control.
Yeah.
That there's other options, that there's other ways to get there. You've got people in your corner who can support you and can back you. It's about backing yourself, but it's also about having greater perspective. It's about looking forward to something else. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of kids and us as adults, right? You go into work and you get hung up on a big meeting you got, and your whole focus is on this thing at work today.
Mm-hmm.
Or your whole focus is on, I'm taking my little kids to the shopping center and there could be meltdowns.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, there might be. But because we focus on that, what you focus on gets bigger, right? Because you focus on that, we put so much stress and anxiety on it already before it even happens, and it might not even happen. But instead, when I ask the kids, what are you looking forward to today? It puts everything into more perspective.
Mm.
And I don't even care if it's, I'm looking forward to training this afternoon. like, awesome. Have something to look forward to. So each morning when I can, what are you looking forward to? What are you grateful for? Of a nighttime, what are you most grateful for today? Again, when I get to drop him off, I ask him, how can you be kind, strong, and thoughtful today? Another one is sharing the stories.
Mm.
Kids love stories. My wife and I, we traveled Europe for 4 months when we were younger. And one night we decided to bring out our travel journals.
Yes.
And we read them to our kids. And we read for about 20 minutes a night for like 1 or 2 weeks straight. And even on Friday night at home, family movie night, the boys like, can we do more stories tonight? They didn't even want the movie. Couldn't believe it. But even, oh, by the way, dads who are uncles or expecting uncles, your nephews and nieces, they need your stories too.
Mm.
Like, you're not their dad, but you're a significant male role model in their life, more so than what you believe. We were camping once and with our extended family, and I can't remember how it even came up, but I started telling a story, one of the ones I share in my work when I work with students, and then they asked me for another one, then another one, and they all sitting around just glued on these stories.
Yeah.
And the next night they asked me to share even more stories. Like, sharing stories helps the kids feel connected to something bigger than themselves. Again, it helps them realize that this is who we are as people. It builds up their internal identity and also enables them to see that other people value different things to me, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the other big thing is with the code. Kids have been really embracing that idea at the moment. They put it as a backdrop on their phone. Having it visible, by the way, is incredibly important. Mm. It's, can't remember the wording for it right now, but it's like an environmental trigger. Yeah, that's what it is, environmental trigger. So having it on my wristband, my wife engraved it on my charging dock for my watch and my phone. It's like kids put it as backdrops on their phone. They make a widget for their phone. One boy said he wrote it on his bedroom ceiling. Now, I don't recommend that, but anyway. That they say that they love being reminded of their personal code just to help them make their decisions for who they need to be. That's building up self-awareness. That's helping them see when they're getting triggered and they want to react.
Yeah.
But instead of reacting, even if it's like 2 out of 10 times, if they put that gap, as you said before, between stimulus and response, 2 out of 10 times, if they stop and go, actually, I need to be kind, and what can I do to be kind right now?
Yeah.
They do it 2 out of 10 times this week. Maybe next week it'll be 3 out of 10 times, then 4 out of 10, you know, and just build and build and build. So enabling them to stop and think about, how can I be purposeful? How can I live to my code? But then I suppose the other thing too is, and this is not so much talking with the kids, I suppose it is a bit, but it's allowing space for the emotion, allowing the space for them to experience it. A lot of people talk about, and you guys might have spoken about this already as well, but you know, the emotion is like a train going through a tunnel.
Yeah.
And you just gotta let it go through. Yeah. It's gonna come out the other side, you don't know when, but having the patience just to sit with it and to be with it and experience it. Like, actually, one of the things we do talk about is the fears. You know, everyone's got these fears about, and the students, there's this moment when they write down their 3 fears for the future, like expectations of self or parents. By the way, yeah, parents of older kids too, kids are freaking out about your expectations of them. They so are. They think, even when you try not to, they think you have these big expectations on the grades you want them to get and how you want them to go and what type of a job or university degree you want them to get, or on sporting days and that type of stuff. So,
Which, you know, really. That storytelling you talked about helps to break down some of that expectation. Because when you say, hey, I didn't actually go to uni for like 7 years, they go, oh, like, pressure's off. So, yeah.
Yeah. And as dads, we can relate to this. Like, we've got fears about being the perfect dad.
Yeah.
You know, but when the kids know that they're not the only one, and as dads as well, that we're not the only one, you have these fears about comparison or not being good enough or about messing up.
Yeah.
You know, knowing that you're not the only one, that there's others in it together with you to bring down that mask, to be vulnerable with each other, to have the deeper conversations. They find that quite helpful too.
Yeah. What I love about all of those tools, and again, same with the code, is that like it's never too early to start implementing some of those things within your family, and especially with mindfulness, like to start to implement some of those mindfulness techniques and breathing techniques and even that why me versus come on, try me, like to start to get that within your kid's psyche and just within the family as well as part of your family dynamic, like it just is so helpful. And there's not a too late either, I think. That it's just so helpful that you know, even if your kids are just about to finish high school, like it can still be really valuable for your family. You know, as you say, like we've got these whole lifetimes together that to offset some of the negatives or offset some of those mistakes that we've made. So I love that what you're talking about is just so practical that it, whatever stage of parenting and family that you're at, they're super effective and relevant. The one that I remember you talking about when we worked together is the stop and what are five things you can hear? Things you can see, what if, you know, really grounding in the senses. And so that's I do with my little fella. If he's, you know, like fighting sleep at nighttime, I take him out on the back veranda and we just look at the stars. And then if we see the blinking lights of a plane and it just, I've like, again, not even 18 months, but I've found it so effective to help ground him and help him just sort of settle. And so all of these things, it doesn't, they're fully age appropriate, whatever age. So,
that it reminded me. Like, I remember when our younger boy, he gets very heightened sometimes after soccer training. Yeah. We're coming home, and it was really like 7 o'clock at night, and he was so high. And I'm like, matey, can you see the bird in the tree? And he had a look, and he's still talking a million miles an hour. And I said, oh, can you see that car? Can you see that boy over there? Can you hear that dog? And I made sure there's no dog barking. I said that, by the way. I said to listen for a bit. But yeah, it's called the five senses. My wife actually does it. So she's a social worker in a hospital, and she does it with grieving families as well.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, what are the five things you can hear, the five things you can feel, and the five things that you can see. And again, doing that with the kids on a school day as well really does help to settle them in a big way. And I remember too when I was changing Eli's nappies. It was at the stage where he didn't really have to wear them during the daytime, but we still want him to wear them at night. And it's actually in this room where we're recording. In fact, it was just over here. Okay. The change shop was just over there. And he was kicking and screaming because he didn't want his nappy on at night time. But one of the things he loved doing was making the animal noises. And I'd be like, what's a cow say? And I was going, moo. This one day he was kicking and screaming like nothing else. And I'm going, Eli, like it's the moment again of who do I want to be right now?
Yeah.
Am I going to be reactive? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to try to be creative and problem solve and be who I want to be in this moment? And so, you know, he likes fun. So I thought I'd try to use some. I'm like, Eli, what's a cow say? And mid scream, he's like, like, Eli, what's a dog say? And he goes like, and he started barking like a dog. He's like, kind of still screaming. Or, you know, what's a horse say? He's like, no. And by the, you know, the fourth or fifth animal noise, he calmed down again. Because again, the attention was taken off the screaming and I don't want a nappy to something else. So, you know, looking at external things, external noises and sounds and stuff makes a big difference for the kids too. So being mindful, being present, focusing on one thing at a time makes a big difference. But I think the breathing techniques, I wish I knew that when the kids were younger. That would have been awesome. On the way to kindy, on the way to daycare.
Yeah.
Hey, mate, let's just do a quick breathing thing right now. Just take a deep breath in, long breath out. Yeah. You know, like, I wish I knew that when I was younger.
For sure, for sure. The one that I do with the daycare drop-off at the moment is, as you say, like, where's the focus going? And so just trying to put the focus on, like, oh, you're going to see, you know, Miss such and such, and you're going to see your friends, and there's a big sandpit, remember? And, like, just seeing him get excited instead of start to get worried and anxious about being away from us. Like all, as I said, like all of these tools are age appropriate, no matter how old your kids are. If they're in their 20s, like you can still, really implement a lot of these techniques. Yeah, like, because it's as you say, it just comes back to being and who are you being and who do you want to be? And I think, like, that's the age old question, no matter which age. So,
And I think, you know, coming back to this, so I chatted with Matt Rogers once. A lot of people know he's like a champion NRL and rugby union player. He spoke about save your best for your best. And that was a big wake up for me. Hey, like, we all go out to work or whatever, and we give so much in that space, and we need to. Yet when we come home, we're drained. Our patience might be down. We don't give ourselves self-care. We feel guilty about going for a run in the morning or going for a gym, when in fact, I know I'm a better dad. I'm so much a better person when I give myself time to go for a run or whatever. But saving your best for your best, which is, for me, it's family.
Yeah.
You know, when I save your best for your family. And that was my mantra for a while as well. And I think by living the code, by being intentional, by taking a moment to stop, breathe, and respond. So as you said, between stimulus and response, there's that gap. And you know, I'd imagine the dads listening to this, that's why they are listening, because they want to give their best.
Yeah.
For the best. So I just want to, encouraging them in doing that, I think it's really important.
Yeah. Love it. And that, I think, is the perfect note to end on, Dave. Like, save your best for your best, from a rugby legend. Does it get better than that for a dad's podcast? Mate, I want to say a sincere thank you. When I was thinking of people I wanted to interview for the podcast, you were one of the first that came to mind, partly because you've got such a big toolbox of things. But then just also I've seen the way you are with your two boys. And you know, what we didn't say is that with your work, you're traveling, you're out and about, and you really do maximize that time and bring that quality and bring that best for them. And I think that's what we want to try and capture on the Dad's Group podcast is optimal parenting, I guess, to put it as one way. But yeah, like, just you are a legend of a dad. And yeah, having, from me outside looking in, seeing your two boys grow up and see how positive an impact you are for them, I had to get you on it and get you sharing with our dad. So
that means a lot. Thanks.
If our listeners want to hear more about your work and want to follow you, where can they find you?
Yeah, on the socials, so at Dave Jorna, it's J-O-R-N-A on there. My podcast, I haven't put a new one on for a couple of years, but I might have to, is Do Life Better. That's what we've been talking about, Do Life Better a little bit, but Do Life Better podcast. Feel free to, the socials, and then the website's Project Hatch, but that's my school stuff. Love to connect on the socials. That'd be great. So Instagram, awesome. LinkedIn, Facebook, you're great.
Awesome.
Love your work. Love what you guys are doing for Dad's Group. Love how you guys are really working hard at empowering a lot of young dads who are, you know, times are shifting and there's a lot more of a want now to be present, to be purposeful, to give quality time, to make dadding count.
Yeah.
And so, hats off to you, Adam, and to the team at Dad's Group for the incredible work that you guys are doing, inspiring a lot of dads out there. So, good on you.
Thanks, Dave. Awesome. Appreciate your work, mate.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks, mate.
Awesome. And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families. There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.